Welcome to Upper Cumberland Outdoors. Today I've got fly fisherman Jimmy Queen. Jimmy, tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from.
I'm originally from North Georgia. My wife's from Baxter. We moved here about 9 years ago and love it here, and this is home now.
Well, good deal. Welcome up to the show. And Jimmy, you've been fly fishing, and tell us, what got you started into fly fishing.
I actually started fly fishing with my great-grandfather when I was a ripe old age of between 5 and 6 years old. So, and I'm 63 now, so I've been toting a fly rod for about 57 years.
So once you got started, you just got that bug and just kept going.
Absolutely. I tell people, and don't take this the wrong way, but it's the most fun you can have with your clothes on.
That's great. So, Jimmy, with anything, people that don't know a lot about a hobby or a sport, or a lot of questions to ask about it. So how hard is fly fishing to start?
It's not as hard as it looks. Casting is basic, it's some simple body mechanics and getting in a rhythm with the rod. The hardest thing about fly fishing is figuring out what little bug you need to have tied on there that the fish are eating that particular day.
Looking at fly fishermen, I always tell folks, I call it like the golf of fishing, because when you see it on TV or you see people when you go out, if you're kayaking or when you're outdoors, the finesse, it's when you see it done properly or you see artwork of it, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And so the finesse of it, it's just a great thing to do. So, there's a lot of, it looks hard to do. So, Jimmy, is it hard to do?
It's not that hard. It's like anything, takes a little bit of practice. So it's like riding a bicycle, playing a musical instrument, anything else. The more you stand out in the backyard and work on getting your casting down, the easier it is.
So it's just like any other thing. The more you put into it, the more you get out of it.
Absolutely.
So just like any other outdoor activity, You have to practice. It's just like bow hunting. You gotta get that bow out. You gotta practice. You just like anything else, you have to practice.
Absolutely.
You just don't pick that rod up and look like something off of Orvis catalog or something like that.
No, it takes a little bit of practice. But anybody can learn. Anybody can learn.
Give us some myths associated with it. You get myths, with any outdoor activity, there's always some type of myth.
Compared to spin fishermen, the fly fishermen, regardless of whether they're fishing for trout, saltwater fish, bass, panfish, or whatever, to a lot of people are considered the elite, like you referred to golf of the fishing world. And a lot of people are just kind of taken aback by that. But there's a lot of really good people out there. And fly fishing for trout in this country has grown exponentially in the last 10 years. There are more people, especially younger people, wanting to learn how to chase trout with a fly rod.
To me, that gets you accessibility. You get closer, you get...
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're, you get to stand in knee-deep or waist-deep, crystal-clear water, and I always tell people one of the best things, other than catching fish, is taking in everything around you, the sound of the water, the wildlife around you, the colors of the leaves and everything, because trout don't live in ugly places. I'm here to tell you that. Anywhere there's trout, it's going to be pretty country.
Yeah, because they like clean, crystal clear water.
Absolutely. They can't tolerate very many pollutants. If trout are in a stream, it's a healthy ecosystem.
And being here in the Upper Cumberland, that's one good thing. We're surrounded by wonderful fishing opportunities.
Absolutely.
Jimmy, we talked about, is it expensive to get into?
Not really. I mean, you see the high-end stuff. There's guys out there toting $1,000, $2,000 fly rods. You can get in it, counting waders and everything. You can get into fly fishing for $300, $400 and have something suitable to test the waters with. You hadn't got to invest, half a year's salary to get into fly fishing and figure out if you're really going to like it or not.
So just like everything else, there's the beginning line stuff, there's middle of the road stuff, and then there's the top of the line stuff. So just like with everything else, you can get in it, try something. If you really enjoy it, you can pay a little more and get. Yeah. But just like I'm sure with you, you've probably got a favorite fly rod that might be you know, might cost a lot of money. And then so there's some friends of mine that have one that, you know, I've got a buddy that one of his favorite fly rods was, you know, probably $50-$60, and he catches just as many fish on that thing that some people.
My favorite one that I coated for 20 years, rod and reel together, cost me $35, and I caught thousands. I repeat, thousands of trout with that rod. Right. So it's not all about the high dollar equipment. It's all about just reading the water, paying attention to what's going on or not going on, what the fish are doing or not doing, and then taking a few little pieces of the puzzle, putting them together, and catching fish.
That's right. Well, folks, we'll be right back with Jimmy Queen. Welcome back. We got Jimmy Queen today, fly fisherman. Jimmy, does fly fishing give you better access to smaller creeks and tributaries that might be a hidden gem to other that otherwise would be hidden?
I believe it does, because there's a lot of really small bodies of water, small streams in East Tennessee, North Georgia, and Western North Carolina that not only do you going to get to fish, but you get to hike through some really pretty country to get access to those wild native fish.
Right. You know, because like right here, you know, we got the big reservoirs. You know, we do have the rivers, but, you know, like Smith Fork Creek right here on the, you know, near the Caney Fork, you know, that's, there's some places you can hike into, you know, not necessarily if you got a kayak or whatever, but if you're wading, you know, that gives you the fly fishing, gives you so much more.
Oh, yeah. And like the Blackburn Fork of the Roaring River, there's some really good fishing in there. Matter of fact, I recently learned from somebody that this time of year, the brown trout, they spawn in the fall. They actually go up the Blackburn Fork a ways and spawn.
Oh, wow. Get you some secret spots there.
Yeah, they come in out of the Cumberland River.
Now, do you tie your own flies or do you buy your supply?
I tie flies. I have a small fly tying / guiding business. I teach classes, fly fishing 101, casting. I have a couple of entomology classes, teach people about aquatic insects so you can identify what's in the water. That way they know what's on the menu. But, yeah, I've been tying flies for about 10 years now.
So that kind of helps you when you're wading. You kind of can see what's in the water, see what's on the menu, so you kind of know what's biting.
Absolutely. I got a bug seine. All it's basically is like cheesecloth, and it wraps around my landing net, and I'll hold that in the water for a few minutes, raise it up, see what aquatic insects I've picked up. If I hadn't picked up any, then I'll hold it right next to the bottom, kick over a couple of rocks. Usually some insects will wash up, and then I may pull up some midge larvae. I may get some caddis pupa. I may wind up with some mayfly nymphs or mergers, and just being able to identify them really helps you narrow down your fly selection so you can be a little more successful.
Now, I know tying your own flies, you know, you have to get those supplies. Some, do you use things in nature that you find, like feathers, things like that?
Yeah.
I use
my own rabbit skins, which I tan and dye. I use my own deer hides and my own squirrel, and I tan and dye all of those.
So you're using things that you're finding out in the outdoors
But the majority of what I get, I have to buy from a supplier. And I deal with probably 30 or 40 different suppliers across the country, according to who's got what I want at any given time.
So just like with everything, it's like what we're talking about promoting with the outdoors. You know, you're using the outdoors, but you're also giving back, you know, when you're, you know, with your classes and everything else, but also with your hobby. You know, I'm sure this is a great stress reliever.
Absolutely. To some people, tying flies would be considered tedious, hard work, but to me, it's one of the most relaxing things I can do. If whether I'm on vacation or we've had to go somewhere or do something, if I go a day and I don't get to set up my vise and tie flies, I feel like I've been cheated out of something that day.
But that, you know, nature can give back to us in many ways, you know, relieving stress. And so that, you know, that's, you get given and also giving back. So now, Jimmy, if you were going to pick one stream or river to fish in the upper Cumberland, where would it be and why?
That'd be the Obi River. Number one, because that really good cold water coming out of Dale Hollow Dam, them fish are in there. They're healthy. They keep it well stocked. There's not as much access to wade as the Caney Fork or other rivers in Tennessee, but the fishing's always been phenomenal for me. I can always go up there and catch a large number of fish and usually catch at least one or two what I consider good fish, which is 24 inches or bigger. And my biggest trout is a 31-inch female brown trout out of the Obie.
That's your personal best?
Personal best.
Personal best, right. So the out of the Obie. So that's your go-to place?
Absolutely.
So the stress relief, are you involved with veterans with fishing?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
I'm involved with a group called Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. We used to have a chapter here in Cookeville, but it got disbanded. So I'm actually involved with the one in Knoxville. And they take veterans, any veteran. You can look them up online, Project Healing Waters, find the closest chapter to you, join. They don't give it to you to keep, but they'll give you waders, they'll give you a fly rod to use, and give you a fly tying vise and the basic fly tying tools, and you can go and learn how to tie flies, learn how to cast, and learn how to catch trout, and then go on all kind of outings. It is a really good organization, and it's at no cost.
Well, that's
it'll cost
that
you a single dime.
That is great. And how can they find out about that again?
You can go online and just look up Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. They're a national organization. They're actually in 48 of the 50 U.S. states right now.
That is great. Well, we'll be right back with Jimmy Queen here in just a few minutes. Welcome back to Upper Cumberland Outdoors. And today I've got Jimmy Queen. Now, Jimmy, it wouldn't be a good fishing show without ending it with a good fishing story. So, Jimmy, give us your best fishing tale, and we'll end the segment with that.
All right. This was 2 years ago, August actually 2 years ago. I was down on the Hiawassee River, been fishing, catching a lot of nice, decent-sized trout, really having a good day. I was fishing, I was fishing a fairly deep hole. I hooked a little, he's probably 9 or 10-inch rainbow. I get him about halfway to me, and about a 30-inch brown trout comes up and latches onto him. And he had such a good hold on that trout, on that little bitty rainbow, he didn't come loose, and I actually netted the fish. And once I got him in the net, when he opened his mouth, he turned that baby trout loose, a 30-inch brown trout. And he was bound and determined to eat it, and he didn't want to give it up. But when I slid that net under him, he finally opened his mouth up.
So he's so close, he almost got him, but nobody was there to see it, though.
One of my buddies was just upriver from me, but he didn't realize what had happened until after I told him. But that's probably one of the better stories I got. And then I fished here on the canyon. I'll give you another real quick one. I usually fish with what's called a dry dropper rig. I use a very large dry fly as an attractor / indicator. And then I got a dropper aligned with a type of nymph on the bottom of it, drifting that along. And one morning on the canyon, I actually had 10 doubles. One fish eat the dry. While he's fighting, another one would eat the nymph. And out of those 10, I managed to get 7 of those doubles actually netted, catching 2 fish at the same time.
Oh, wow. That's a good day. that's real good.
It's awesome when it happens like that. It's real good.
Because
two little bitty trout fighting against each other and you makes you think you've got one on long as your arm.
Yeah. Well, now, let's get serious for one moment here. Now, one thing when people are waiting, you know, one thing I like to try to always talk about safety. So, you know, one thing when folks are waiting and they're fishing, you know, one thing we need to be cautious about when they're waiting, you know, one, they don't want to step in, get too deep, because if waders fill up with water, they could drown.
Absolutely. So, always wear your wading belt good and snug, because that'll keep your waders from completely filling up, and hopefully you can get back to the bank. And I suggest, regardless of the slow-moving water or the canny fork or any fast water, you carry a wading staff, a collapsible wading stick. It'll help you keep your foot and keep your balance. And it's on a little tethered lanyard. And it'll just be floating along in the water behind you if you need it.
Do you prefer felt-bottom boots, or do you like the –
Well, I use felt bottoms myself. There's a lot of people that advocate the felt with the little metal studs in them. Mm-hmm. I never had a lot of luck with the rubber bottom boots and that slick moss on rocks. Is just them two go together like oil and water. You're going to slip and fall. Felt bottoms, it gives you a little bit of traction. The rocks will still be slippery, but you get just a little bit of traction with felt bottom wading shoes.
Any other safety tips you'd like to put out there?
It's mainly just really be aware. And having that wading staff, if you're going to take a few steps further out and the water looks a little deeper, use that stick out there and then use this as a measuring stick, because there's a lot of places you can be, and you can be standing waist deep and you step forward 6 or 8 inches and now you're up to your chin. So you got to be really careful. It's mainly just watching and stumbling over rocks and logs in the water. That's caused a lot of people to fall.
And always tell somebody where you're going fishing at.
Yeah, if you don't got a fishing buddy, always let somebody know where you're going to be on what body of water, when you're leaving, and when you expect to get home or when you expect to come off the river.
Right. Always good tips. Now, Jimmy, you mentioned before that you do fly tying classes and things like that. Do you also teach casting? How could somebody get a hold of you if they wanted to maybe do that?
Two ways. You can contact me via my phone number, which is 931-644-8312, or you can send me an email. It's all lowercase letters. It's troutwhisperer5959@gmail.com, or you can look up Trout Whisperer Fly Fishing Outfitters, which is my Facebook page, and you can leave me a note or a message on there, and I'll respond as soon as I can.
Well, this has been another episode of Upper Cumberland Outdoors. Jimmy, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jimmy, and let's get outdoors.